I got more questions for you than you have for me.
We're rolling. Welcome to the Eric Lang Show. Richard Kind has a lot of questions here, but...
Welcome.
Do you want to introduce the show?
Sure. How are you? Let's play golf.
Richard here. I guess, you know, you've done a lot of stuff. Growing up in the 80s, I was addicted to Mad About You.
That wasn't the 80s. That was...
Was it early 90s?
It was the 90s.
So then I was 9 years old. I was 9 years old.
9 years old. Oh, you didn't like that show?
I loved... No, I really did, man. I loved that show. I was into that show. I was into Frasier. I loved... For some reason, okay. I liked shows where it was
I love Frasier. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, did you watch Cheers?
Of course.
Okay. By the way, can I just talk and you'll edit it? Or will this
I try not to edit it. We try to just go in one go. Is there... You can curse? What are you...
No, it's not that. It's just I talk a lot.
No, that's
okay.
Good.
Okay.
That's good. Say whatever you want.
All right, I'll say whatever I want. I did... Geez, Mad About You was... Got to be mid-90s. You want to know something?
Tell me.
I guess it was early 90s, because then... The way that I gauge things is by Michael Boatman's daughter's age.
Michael Bolton or Michael
Boatman? Boatman. Who was the actor on... the African-American actor on... All right, he's black. The black actor on Spin City. Right. His daughter was born a week after we started shooting the show.
Oh, that's your...
And now she's 21. So now I realize how old I am, how long Spin City's been started. And then before that, I guess, you know, it was three or four years before.
What's crazy is in my head, Spin City's a new show. You know what I mean? Because that's like, I don't know. Like,
because then you were old. You were old enough to be aware of things.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah.
So when people come
it's
up
like
to
modern
you,
television. It wasn't radio.
Your Wikipedia is deep, dude. You're like, there's like 170 things.
Oh, I think there's more. I hate to say
290.
It. 400. Okay. I know it's over 200.
There's, you can't remember them all.
Oh, when people bring up, I really liked you on, or I don't know what you're talking about. And as close as a year ago, that something that I did, and I go, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. And then they would describe it, and I go, oh, yeah.
So,
I mean, but you got to understand, it lives for a life, but that day could be 4 hours.
Right.
You know, it took me 4 hours to shoot that. Goodbye. Thanks very much for the craft service. I'm out of here. And I'll never see it. It's work. Sometimes it's money. Sometimes it's really good money. Very often it's not good money. And I go do it because I do it.
Right.
Like, I don't know whether I'll remember this.
I'm sorry. I will. That's okay.
You don't have to remember this. Yes, I know.
And
God knows I'm getting a fortune for this.
You actually got a tall coffee in a grande cup. That's what I did. That's my trick.
I did. Oh.
I get a tall coffee in a grande cup, and they usually give you a little more. Not that I'm that cheap. I just don't like, because they give you the coffee, and it's like overflowing.
That's very smart.
Thank you. I learned it from someone else.
Very smart. Oh, yeah. Okay.
So anyway, people come up to you. What do they say when they come up to you on the street? Because you must get a lot.
Oh, I get a few things.
You must get a lot.
First of all, okay, the bad ones are, you're an actor. Yeah. Yeah, I recognize you. Yeah, good for you. You sat on a couch.
Right.
The second thing is, and then it runs to the gamut with to... You know, I really have to thank you. My mother was very ill with cancer, and we watched you every day. We watched reruns of blah, blah, blah. And you always made my mother laugh, and that's the loveliest thing. And then in between is, dude, you're a great actor, or wow, I love everything you do. Or it's when they get specific about stuff where they didn't have to sit on a couch and just turn on their TV, but they went to a play that I might have done, or saw a good movie that not everybody saw and that I'm proud of. That one you sort of like, but, you know, you just get it all up and down the line. Now, my wife will be walking down the street and we'll be arguing, and somebody will walk by and go, oh, I love you. And I go to my wife, I go, you see, he loves me. This guy, he loves me. And she literally says, you must not have a bad day in your life. And I go, you're out of your mind. These are strangers who happen to have their own reality of which I'm not connected to myself. I don't know them. So, yes, I like being complimented, but no. I when they say I love you, I love it, but it doesn't change my world. It's like it should.
Right.
Okay, now, when I was a kid and I lay in bed dreaming of the day when somebody knew me or wanted my autograph or said I was great, I'd stop in my tracks. I couldn't wait for it. I'd hate to put it like this. Anybody worth their salt, it doesn't really mean that much. You like accolades, it's great. I dreamt of winning an Academy Award. It's not going to happen. And I live with it, and it's
fine. How do you know it's not going to happen?
Well, I hope it still happens. Oh, my God, I hope it all happens.
Yeah.
But I found out that I really love to work.
Right.
That's what I love to do.
The work itself.
Yeah, it's playing pretend, and it's fun, and it's challenging, and it's great. I love to work.
Right.
And that, unfortunately, is something producers know.
What do you mean? Oh, in the sense that they can just sort of grind you down?
Yes, and say, you know, we only had this amount of money to do. Look, I like the part. I like the project is great. Yes, of course I'll do it. Of course I will.
Right.
So, you know, it's tough.
And so, you know, you have this wonderful career. You love it, which I think is really, I think what's cool about, one of my favorite types of people to interview on this show is actors, because obviously they're very creative and their job is to entertain, but also I think they love their lives. At least it seems that way with the people that I've met. You know, there's like a, you know, also like, I mean, you have this sort of, you've lived out your dream, right? And so
you want to know something? I used to think it took a lot of courage to become an actor. It takes a lot more courage to leave the business. You know, at age 28, you know, your whole life, you dreamt of being an astronaut. Then you dreamt of being a baseball player. Then you dreamt of being a rock star. Well, that wasn't going to happen. But then you dreamt of being an actor. Well, I could do that. And you do it.
That's doable.
And you do it up until you're about 28, 29, and you realize I'm waiting tables and I've got the best shifts, but this is not what I had in mind. And then you have to leave. Now, I've known a few people who did that, and they left for greater fortune, as in producer of a TV show, or agent, or producers, and they stay in the business, but they're far wealthier, far more successful. Would they have been happier being an actor? I don't know. And I will tell you this about acting sometimes. A couple of things. You wake up every morning without work, and you wonder, will I ever work again? Or where is the good job?
Even you now.
Oh, God, yes.
That's insane.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know when it started? When I got on Spin City and I go, oh, this is great. And it was running for a few years.
How many years? Like six?
It was 6 years. But and you go, what am I going to do when this is over? Oh, my God. Or every job you get. Is this the last job I'll ever get? Or you think that way.
And that's not just you. That's you've talked to other actors as successful as you.
They're not as neurotic, Jew, as I am. But every actor's neurotic.
This is the Upper West Side right here.
Yeah, right, exactly. Now, the other thing you think of, and this, if you're worth your salt, you'll feel this way. You do your job that day, on the ride home, you're driving, and you go, oh, you know what I should have done with that line? God damn it. And you can't do it again. It's gone, and you obsess about it. There are lines in a show that I still think about. Years gone by. Oh, God, why didn't I hit the line on that? Or I should have done that. Or you watch the film, which I don't do a lot, but you watch it and go, oh, I know what I wanted to do with that. Or then you see it, and you go, oh, why didn't I do that? Now, with a play, you get to do it over and over and over again. And that's why I like doing plays, so that you get to correct what you... All those things about, oh, why didn't I do this? You get to try it. You may be wrong, by the way, but it's fun to make that mistake.
Right. Yeah, I think that's why I actually have a hard time listening to the podcast itself. Mm-hmm. Because later on, I'm like, oh, he literally teed me up for some great thought.
Is that the worst?
Yeah.
Right.
Then, yeah,
me up or oh, God, why did I make that joke? Or even worse, why didn't I say that line?
Yeah.
Teed me up with a great joke or a great story, or I really should have pressed that more, and yet I was in my own head and only thinking about the next question when I should have said, oh, why didn't I continue with that line of questioning?
Exactly.
It kills you.
Yeah, it's pretty frustrating.
But don't worry, you'll be able to catch up on our second interview.
Yeah, I'll forget. Well, we were talking before I turned the mics on about you wanting to be on the show Adventures in Golf. Which you haven't seen yet. I'm going to show it to you.
I would love it.
You're going to love it.
I would. I'd love it. And I hate you for doing it because I have thought of this. I mean,
you've been busy making money. You own, do you own this apartment?
I don't own.
Okay.
I own the other one.
You own the other one. He's got two.
I rent this. Well, yes. Well, I have. Yeah. Okay. I've got an empire. But I thought of doing something of doing something like that because I think I'd be fun on a golf course and getting guys out there and, you know, just playing three holes, four holes. I mean, you record the whole 18?
Well, we do. I'll send it to you, but we'll spend days in a place and we'll do like the introduction is like a walk and talk through the streets of Mumbai. We record that.
Fantastic.
It takes 3 hours. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And then we go to, it's never like 18 holes really. It's more like an experience of an unusual way of playing golf. Like in Mumbai, they play golf in the slums on streets that are smaller than the length of the couch or the width of the couch.
Well,
with like bent metal and ping pong balls, but it's golf, and they're all the caddies at Mumbai Golf Club across the street. So that's one of the wildest.
Okay,
ones.
That's you can't have many of those like that, can you?
Well, you know, I got that a lot. Are you going to run out of episodes? Well, sure, you're going to run out of some episodes like that, but
no. But
I've
isn't
found...
every golf course just aren't they pretty much okay? Yeah, you have the you know the Scottish courses with the links courses versus a country club or a resort or a really hard championship course. Okay, those are different. But how many of those? How many really are off the beaten track that they are dirt roads?
Well, there aren't that many. But the truth is, we haven't gone to Africa. We haven't gone to South America. Mm-hmm. I haven't gone to Central America. We haven't been to China. I mean, there's even within all those places. Yes, that's the extreme example in Mumbai. But the truth is, if the show is merely just about it's called Adventures in Golf. So if that's if the theme of the show is strange people in strange places all playing golf, I think I could find it anywhere. We could go to a driving range in the middle of, Guangzhou.
Oh, driving ranges are a class unto themselves. You know, that they're great. Now, Lee Trevino, by the way, grew up in, I think, Texas or New Mexico, and that's how he learned to play golf, is playing on dirt, on hitting a golf ball on dirt, so he can pick anything, and he can and became a great golfer because he had to. I mean, the conditions were the worst, so he gets to a golf course. Oh my God, it's why believe me, this is heaven, compared to what I used to hit off of.
You love golf.
I do. I really, really do.
What? How? Why? When?
All right. This is it's interesting. It's interesting because it's me. My dad was a very good golfer. He played golf in the Army. When he passed away, he was a 6 handicap. So he's a really good golfer, and he begged me to take up golf. He gave me the lessons. He belonged to a country club, gave me the clubs, the club itself, the teacher, everything I wanted. And I said, I don't want to. And here's what I tell my kids. And you know what my dad said? Okay. And he didn't force me. He didn't make me play. And if I had my life to live over again, I would have learned when I was a kid. Because, and this is a really good, this is for those of you who have children. When you're a baby can fold itself in half. It's unbelievable. A baby can sit there and grab their own feet while they're in a stroller. Okay? And then all of a sudden they become 3 years old. They can't grab their toes like that anymore. They can't fold in half anymore. They're still limber, but they can't do that. They become 10. Well, all of a sudden, or 11 or 12, they get muscles and they're not as loose. And then you get to 13 and then to 20 and to 30. And as you grow older, your body changes in ways that are not great for golf. So at age 10 or 11... if you can feel what it really means to make a turn and to swing out and let the club, the head of the club, be stronger than your arm, so you can only swing on the right path because you can't muscle the edge of the club, you will have a natural golf swing. So at age 11 or 12, get your kids lessons to a golf range. Just let them hit it. Do not let them play. They shouldn't be on the golf course that early because the worst that could happen is what happened to me is I became addicted to it. Okay? I'm addicted to golf, and I'll tell you about that
even
in
still.
A second. What?
Even still.
No. I'll tell you why I am, what I am. But a kid should have so many interests. You know, a kid like Tiger Woods the poor guy didn't have a life. You see these Asian girls who are forced to practice hours and hours a day. Granted, they're great golfers. They make a heck of a living. But give a child a childhood. Let them experience life. And if they want golf, then they'll play it all they want. But get a kid lessons and let them learn how to swing the club. You don't take them every once a week or anything. But if a kid gets on a golf team and starts playing every day and goes to the range for 4 hours a day, he's gotten a life. When does he read? When does he think about movies or about his friends or goes and get in fights or whatever it is? A child should have a childhood. So I said no to my dad. And my kids, I say, you're going to take golf lessons. And they go, we don't want to. And I say, I don't care. You're going to learn how to swing the club. And I wish that my dad had said, when I said, I don't want to, and he said, okay, I do the opposite. I say, sorry, you're going to take lessons. Flip side of that is it's so hard in New York to play golf.
Right.
It's just hard. You know, every time you enter the city, do you know it's $15 to get through the tunnel? I mean, think about that. To get to your own hometown, you have to pay $15. So you leave.
That is crazy.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
$15 to enter your hometown.
That's crazy now that you say it that way.
I know. To go into the Lincoln Tunnel, the George Washington Bridge, the Verizon, it's $15. Crazy. And you have to go out of the city in order to play golf.
Right.
So you got the lessons, and it's just tough. You got to move the car. You got to get the car, schlep all the way out there. Who knows if there's traffic? Sometimes it takes 45 minutes to get from New York to the Lincoln Tunnel out to New Jersey. And then you got to drive and find a good pro. And it's very difficult. And where do you practice here? It's outrageous. Now, when I became addicted to golf, I belong to Lakeside Golf Course in L.A.
In L.A. Oh, okay, cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I was like, is there a Lakeside here too?
No.
I love Lakeside.
I love Lakeside.
Yeah, yeah.
I became addicted to golf. I became addicted to the club and to the membership. It's a fraternity. It is, and like, I know, does your audience know where you belong?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so you belong to Wilshire.
Yeah.
Great course.
Very similar.
Yeah. Layout, and yeah. And I agree with you.
Yeah, I like the course at Lakeside like 1% more.
It's a better course.
It's a great course.
But Wilshire is a great course. Membership. Let's talk membership.
Yeah. Lakeside. The reason why I didn't join Lakeside is because I was married at the time. It didn't really work for that scenario.
It really doesn't.
It's not. It's a family spot.
And now that you're single, it really works. I haven't got the words to tell you how much it would work. It's the most fun place. Yeah. Just guys drinking and playing cards and just talking about women. And it's the most fun. It's a fraternity.
You know Dave McGuire?
I do.
That was the first round I played with there. He's a good guy.
Okay, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
But so many great guys so there. It's a great, great course. And I love Dave McGuire.
Yeah.
I love him. But I love so many people there. When I lived in L.A., I bought my house from the president of Wilshire Country Club. He's no longer alive, so I can malign him. He was a jerk. A real, you know. I mean, he was
what made him a jerk?
The sales were okay. He was a little, let's just put it this way. The way the house was decorated is how the president of a country club would decorate his house.
Sure,
That's not me.
Was it in Hancock Park?
It was.
Okay.
Over on Plymouth.
Okay.
And we're walking this. It's where I should have joined because of where I lived.
Right.
But like an idiot, I joined Lakeside, and now I live in New York, and I'm still a member of Lakeside, and I don't belong to a club here.
Right. Have you thought about it?
I pray for a course here. I got three kids, and I can't do that. I'd be a two membership guy.
Yeah.
I can't do that.
But you get out and play enough.
Oh, I play a lot.
You must get out. What's your favorite track around the city?
Where
do you end up
on? I am lucky to go to... I have friends who belong to private courses.
Sure,
I see you fiddling with the dial.
I'm just trying to because you modulate your voice a lot. You got a lot. Your highs are high, but I want to let you do your thing.
Okay, no, I will. So I'm not changing for your hands. I'm going to keep talking like this. I have a lot of friends who belong to private courses, and I'm very grateful whenever I get taken out. I'll tell you one story. This is a great one. And I don't think he'll mind me saying it. You ever go out to the Hamptons?
I was just there this weekend. I got to play some amazing golf.
What course? Where? What courses?
I played, in order of my preference, the lowest first. I played Friar's Head.
You didn't like Friar's Head? All I hear is the greatest about Friar's Head, and I've never played it. I've been invited, and I've never been able to.
Yeah, I mean...
Wow!
I won't go into too much detail, because I already talked about it a bit, but here's my take on Friar's Head.
Go ahead.
Real quick. Really new, really fucking expensive, and somehow that means that they treat guests like kind of like they're not supposed to be there. That was my experience.
Oh, I'm sorry. How about the course itself?
I loved the front nine. I was told that's the inferior nine. I like the front nine.
Okay. So what? Okay. Keep going.
Yeah. Moving on. Maidstone the next morning.
Okay. The greatest.
Love it.
Yeah.
And then National.
You played National.
That for me immediately became my favorite course.
Okay. Wait. Have you heard of the Bridge?
I have. I was actually. Do you know the Gohlers?
I don't.
Mike and Megan. They're members there. They live there. That's where I was staying. I played there like a month ago.
I don't think. It would be horrible if I do know them, and I just can't picture their...
They're not listening to the podcast.
They're not?
No.
I hate the Gohlers.
The Gohlers are
No,
great.
I don't know them, but I don't know a lot of members there, and
sure.
If I do, I know them by face.
Yeah.
And just say hello.
Okay. It's a cool spot, huh?
Well, let me tell you my history with the Bridge. The man who outright owns it,
yeah.
A guy named Bob Rubin. Who made a fortune. He's got a brilliant mind for finance, brilliant. And you would think that he is this conservative, money-hungry, you know, just take it all like a murder. He is the opposite. He is the most gracious, liberal, worries about his fellow man in ways that I've never seen anybody, especially a rich person. Now, he grew up in Jersey. Worked at at the track. He worked at gas stations, everything like that. Made a bundle in the market or whatever the hedge funds were, and he loved cars, so he bought the Southampton racetrack for various reasons, whether it be zoning or the cars weren't allowed in, or that the times were changing, or the place changed. The town wanted to shut down. He turned it into a golf course, and he's not a golfer. The course is breathtaking. It's a breathtaking course. And he is such an eclectic man. He went to graduate school for architecture, and he, along with somebody else, built the clubhouse. The shape of the clubhouse, very modern. So it doesn't really suit what you would think for a beach community, but it's very modern, but it's the roof, the layout of the building follows the topography of the distance of the shorelines and all the area.
I didn't notice that.
And did you go up there?
I mean, yeah, I was struck by the clubhouse, and I was
the
like,
this clubhouse is stunning.
Yeah, it's the coolest clubhouse in
golf. Coolest clubhouse ever.
Without a doubt.
He designed it. He's so proud of it.
I didn't
By
know
the
that.
Way, the men's locker room?
Yeah.
The walls are glass.
It's crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah, you can see for miles while you're changing.
You can see for what miles, but how about the people who can see in?
I didn't even
And they
think
have
of
to
that.
See... You know, millimeters. But yes, of course. But supposedly because of the reflection of the thing. But I still walk with a towel, and I walk in my underwear. But
right.
I ain't gonna.
I didn't even think of that.
But yeah, now if you put your head up to the, you know, with your hands up to the glass,
yeah.
You're looking in, and you're looking at a penis.
Club. It's a private club. You know, so you're not getting a lot of crazy. Do you experience private clubs? People being crazy? They're pretty normal, right?
Nobody's normal.
Well behaved. Nobody's normal.
Nobody's normal. And these people, they're the richest people in the world.
It's pretty expensive to join.
You think?
And it's like,
I think it's 800.
It's pushing, yes, six, seven figures.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know.
It's crazy.
And for many people, this is their second club.
Yeah, yeah. Your home course is a different
right,
one.
Right, it's a different course.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah.
But the membership is very nice when they're very nice. And they are. They're very nice. And I have nothing to say. They're all very kind to me. Okay, listen to why I belong there, and I don't belong there. There's a theater out in Sag Harbor called Bay Street Theater.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the board of the theater. I've done a lot of plays out there. I love going out there. I'm not a huge fan of the Hamptons, but when I'm working, At least I don't have to deal with all the people. I get to do what I love to do. I do a play. It's usually very smart. It's not like a big Broadway, blah, 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 musical. It's usually a play. So I get to really, you know, do my craft. Restaurants are great. People can be very nice. I have a lot of friends out there and have a great time. Having a house out there, not so much. So I'm going out to do a play. And I was going to, I had met Bob 4 to 6 times and shook his hand, and he wasn't impressed with me. I'm not impressed with him, but he owns a course, but he was very nice. So I was going to write him an email saying, "Dear Mr. Rubin, I'm coming out to do a play at Bay Street Theater. It is prohibitive to join a club out there because from the moment you enter the island until you get to Montauk, there are no public courses. There's a 9-hole public course, but there's no access to a course. Can I avail myself of your driving range maybe 2 times a week just to go over lines, just clear my head, you know?" And I never sent it. Out of the blue, about a month later, and I'm not kidding, just imagine getting this letter. "Dear Mr. Kind, I am a huge fan of yours from Curb Your Enthusiasm and a show that I did called Luck, which was about horse racing." And he was very much into horse racing.
Right.
"He said, I understand you're coming out to do a play. Please consider yourself an honorary member for the summer."
What?
I know. I know. "Consider yourself an honorary member for the summer." It was, I started to cry.
Oh, yeah.
Here's a $1 million golf course. And I can go out there and play whenever I want. Just had to pay for caddy, for food, and for guests. That's all I had to pay for. No dues. Luckiest man alive. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I needless to say, I took advantage of it. And although it's expensive, even just, you know, it's the caddies and everything. You know, a Coke is $9.
Yeah.
But they're very kind to me, and I'm a good guy, so they're very welcoming to me. I then did a number of things to help. He's big in ecology. I hosted an event that he had, and then he had a couple of unusual things. He calls on me if he needs a favor done, any hosting, anything like that. My pleasure. And not just, it's my pleasure to do it whether or not I get to go to his club at all. But he said, he's joked about it, permanent lifetime member. Honorary member. So when I go out there, I have a place to play or a place to hit balls. I try not to abuse that.
Sure.
And I'm not out there a lot. But when I go there, I walk on thinking it's okay that I play here. And Bob is, as always, is gracious. I get to play with him every once in a while. I know his family. And so I'm the luckiest guy in the world. But going out to the Hamptons is bit of a distance, and you know, it's the Hamptons.
It's a bit intense, the Hamptons.
It's as I, you know what I call it? It's, you know, what's your address? Oh, it's 1,204 Wall Street. That's my address in the Hamptons. It's
right.
Just it's those
crazy
people. I mean, Gary Cohn is a member of
of
the Bridge.
Yeah.
You know, Trump's former. So
it's crazy.
I mean, it's crazy and it's silly money.
Yeah.
In a time when there's tragic money with people who are trying to hold on to 2-3 jobs just to raise their family. So the disparity is tremendous, but I don't blame anybody for being rich.
Let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, you know, because before we turned the mics on, you know, we talked a little bit about, like, you know, just casual stuff. And I was sort of saying how I got into golf. And I think what's interesting in my story is, like, basically, I hated golf without ever. I guess I didn't know that I hated the golf swing. I didn't know. I hated the culture of golf, but I loved the golf swing. And so for me, it was interesting that the culture of something prohibited me from experiencing something that I would ultimately enjoy and devote my life to.
I can respond to that. I belong to a club, or my parents belong to a club. You know what? I got a cough. I've been talking too much. Hold on.
Take it. Yeah.
My parents belonged to a club in Lawrenceville, New Jersey called Green Acres. And it was truly the culture of a country club. And the gossip was rife. sometimes aimed at people that I knew and loved, sometimes even my parents. My dad was a bigwig at the club. And my mom, you know, especially when my it just was tough. I didn't like it. And therefore, I never joined a club. When I was 45, I was going to have a kid. Okay, my daughter Skylar was going to be born. Now, I used to play up at Robinson Ranch in L.A., or I'd play wherever I could. And Robinson Ranch was a 40-minute, 45-minute drive. And with traffic, who knows? And then on weekends, a long round, could be 5 hours. And so here's my daughter going to be born. In order for me to serve her as a father, I better get a place that's close. So I joined Lakeside. Not your typical club. Very different from the, although there's gossip, not bad, not like it was spiteful at my parents' club. And it was a great decision. However, like I said, I became addicted to golf and I became addicted to the club. So it got to the point where I wouldn't see my kid, and yet the whole reason I joined there was to have more time with her. Okay, it's a 15-minute drive, but I'd be drinking or playing gin afterwards or playing 36 holes of golf or something. And I was lying to my manager and to my agent about auditions, or I can't do it, you know, I can't do it. Can you make it at this time? Because unless it's after 3, I can't go. It was horrible, and I was wrong. So that's why I moved to New York, because you really have to want to play golf to get out of the city and go play. So I was really addicted, and that's one reason why I was happy about leaving L.A. But it is the reason, what you're talking about, country club, much less golf. Golf is, I mean, we talked about this place in Mumbai where the caddies play on the street. That's just not golf in America. I know for Lee Trevino it was. It's not golf in America, and it's an expensive sport. It's not as bad as horses, but still, it's expensive. You know, you go out and you're paying $50 a round, and you got to get the club. Once you buy the clubs and the balls, you're fine. But it's $50 a round, and that's a decent amount of money.
Yeah, and it's the time. It's a ton of time.
And the time, absolutely, the time it takes.
Well, so what compels you to play or get better? Like what is that? What, you know, because you said you were addicted to it, but what there must have been something within the game itself, the betterment of it, or what is it? I mean, it's a wonderful escape, but I mean,
gosh, I wish. Okay, now I really have to be thoughtful, spiritual. I guess the best thing you can do, there are two things, but this is a little glib, is you're only competing against yourself, really. And how can I be better? And what did I bring to the course today? How can I breathe deep and be an athlete? Even though it seems like golf is not athletic, you have to be an athlete. There are certain things that you have to control your body in order to make the proper swing. It doesn't take a lot of strength, but it does take you must be in control of your body, not in ways that a rugby player or a football player would be, but it's a different thing. The other thing is, of course, the perfect score in golf is not par, it's 18. That would be the perfect score. And as we know, and probably most of your listeners know, once you start getting pretty good, the differential of 2 strokes is Everest. You know, oh my gosh, I shot an 81. How do I shoot a 79? It's Everest. How do I break 80? How do I get to be so much better? How can my front nine be so good and my back nine be shit? There are things. Why can't I pull it all together? Why are my drives good today, but I'm chipping like garbage? I'm sculling the ball across the green. What am I doing? Why am I not better? Gosh, I'm thinking about something else. Concentrate on the moment. Then you concentrate and your wrists tighten up and you've got no hinge. And it's a real challenge. And you have only yourself to blame. That's all you do. You can say, oh, Jesus, my wife called while I was on the course, screwed up my game. That didn't. You screwed up your game because of how you reacted to your wife. Got to get back into the athletic mindset, or the athlete's, not an athletic mindset, the athlete's mindset. And it's fun, so you could stay away from your wife. You got 4 hours to be away. It's a joke.
Do you see any, you know, the way you were describing it, like it's on you, the distractions, ultimately you're responsible for all those things. Does that ever, it sounded to me like you could also be talking about theater. Do you see any connections there?
No, I see the camaraderie that you have in theater, with the camaraderie that you have with a foursome, or a lot of times at Lakeside we play fivesomes and sixsomes. It's gotten as high as eightsomes. It's ridiculous.
I love that.
I do too.
That's the best.
I think it's better than foursomes.
Yeah, I played with 23 on one hole. Really? The starter at, you know, Wilson. The public course down there in Griffith Park.
Sure, yeah.
It was funny. We teed off with 23 people, and he was like, "Are you allowed to do this?" And I was like, "I don't know if we're not." And he was like, "All right." I mean, we teed off late. Like, it was like 2 hours before sunset.
And 23 people.
Yeah, one hole.
On one hole.
Yeah, all playing the same ball. All playing your own ball.
Your own ball.
Not even a scramble.
So what does "you're away" mean?
It means watch out.
Watch out, yeah. The most I've played with was eight.
Yeah.
But at Lakeside, and it's something that I had to learn.
But eight's the same as 23, by the way. It's just as confusing.
Is it really?
Eight is really confusing. And eight's almost more confusing because it's closer to four. And so you're expecting, you know, whatever. People are still, with 23, you're not marking.
But you got to wait 7 minutes for 23 people to tee off.
No. It's just like pop, 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 pop. It's like fireworks.
Oh, so three kinda people will be in the.
Yeah. You can fit like four on a tee box. Well, Wilson has wider tee boxes than Lakeside.
Interesting.
Lakeside, the tee boxes are long.
Yeah. Interesting. Oh, okay. That would be fun.
Anyway, so if you were going to do an adventure in golf, right? I've told you a little bit about the show. What would you do? What have you already done? What's the craziest, farthest, wildest golf experience? Or what do you want to do? Whichever answer you want to.
Let me see. I've been really lucky to play the great courses. I really have. I've been very lucky.
Much outside America?
Just Scotland. I did play Portugal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Portugal's gorgeous.
Well, like on the cliffs kind of probably? Or
Yeah.
I haven't played there.
Like, it's gorgeous. Scotland is, the really good ones in Scotland are so great. Have you played it? Have you played Scotland?
I've been, I can't remember, three times.
Ayrshire.
Three
Ayrshire.
Times. Ayrshire. I'm going there in a week. Actually, by the time this podcast is out, I'm already there. But we'll see.
Oh, yeah, very lucky. It's gorgeous.
I've never been to that area.
And staying there is cheap. And you come off the course, and lunch is there. I've got some great, great golf stories of when I was playing in Scotland. You take a caddy. Now the caddy only takes one bag. Okay, so I can't read a green for the life of me. So I would ask the caddy, which way does this break? So I'm playing with, I was hooked up with an American father and his son were playing along with us. And they had so they're playing. I took a caddy. They didn't take a caddy. I took a pull cart. And we're playing. We're on the green. And I said, which way does this break? And told me. And then the father goes, which way does mine break? And the Scottish guy goes, ask your fucking pull cart. That's one of my favorites.
The cool thing about the Scottish people, and one of my best friends is actually Scottish, and they have an innate ability to, at the same time, make fun of you and strengthen your friendship. You know,
I am the same way.
Yeah.
But I mean, with you,
yeah.
I'll make jokes about you and what you're doing here,
right.
Or you know, the life you lead or something like that.
Right.
But I call it there's snot in your nose. A good friend will tell you there's snot in your nose.
They should. Yeah.
I will get closer to somebody by utzing them, giving them a little insult,
right.
You know, about, I mean, you people can't see him at home, but believe me, when he says he doesn't like the country club life, he looks it. He looks like he does not like the country club life, and I'm all for that. By the way, Bob Rubin,
yeah,
everything you're wearing here,
that's his
style. Go out on the course.
Yes.
You're allowed to wear a hat inside the clubhouse. Not only that, you can wear it backwards if you want.
Whoa.
You can go out with gym shorts.
That's
you
huge.
Can wear whatever you want. Bob does not want a country club.
I want to go back now.
He's great. Just, the only thing he won't let you do is talk on the phone.
I can respect that.
I do too.
You can text though, yeah?
You can text.
Texting
or email.
Is necessary.
Yeah, yeah.
I gotta coordinate shit. At Friars Day, they told me I couldn't text. I was like, what the you're using a fucking computer.
Oh, some of the rules.
Yeah.
Okay. Here, what are some of your favorite country club rules that you just go, I can't believe this?
Well, at Wilshire, I can't wear my hat backwards, and I got shit for that. That bothered me. I was like,
yeah, that's wrong.
Yeah, I was like, I'm just wearing it backwards just for, a second. I've heard that there are some clubs in Scotland where you have to wear a certain type of sock, like an ankle sock or something.
I'm going to tell you something. At Baltusrol.
Oh,
you have to wear the pads, right?
What's that? That's an ankle sock.
The ankle socks. Okay,
I couldn't wear my no-shows here. I'm wearing like a slipper. If those of you at home,
I think you're able to do that. But anyway, the low cut things. Now I can't. Like you're very tan, right?
Yeah.
I used to be very tan, and I have a skin disease called vitiligo.
Oh no!
So my pigment is gone.
Right.
It's all right. You know what?
You look fine. You look fine.
I look terrific.
You look great.
No, but I can't tan.
No sun.
So I wear these socks. Okay.
Right.
But when I'm out playing, so that I can protect myself as much as I can, I look like an old man with my socks very high.
And you wear tube socks, or you go Argyle?
No, I wear these socks. These, in fact, I only have one pair. These are they.
Yeah.
No, I wear these kind of socks,
right.
And they go up mid-calf,
right.
So that I don't have to slosh on the sunblock there. Okay? Baltusrol, you're not allowed to wear these socks. You have to wear the pads.
Not happening.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's a very, old course. You know, they can get away with that, I guess.
These clubs get away with murder.
Yeah. That's a funny story. Baltusrol, named after, do you know the story?
No.
It's named after a murder. There was a guy named Baltusrol. It's a crazy story. I should look it up. It's a crazy story.
The man's
story.
Name was Baltus, first name Baltus?
Yeah, Roll. And he was murdered by someone else or some version of that. Wow. There was a murder. Anyway.
That's great.
It's I don't know the
well,
full
God
story.
Knows it's in the area. It's in New Jersey,
yeah.
Right? Where
I grew up like 10 minutes away.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
have
I
you
never
played
knew
the
anything.
Course.
I have. I played it a couple of years ago, and I was like trembling. So when you walk up to a private course,
hold on. I just want to say two other weird things at El Cab in LA.
Yeah, I played it.
Okay. It's the slowest players
in
the world.
5.5 hours.
It's outrageous. It's outrageous.
Yeah. Well, it's so easy to lose a ball.
It's true, but there's water there.
Yeah.
You are not permitted to reach in, much less have a ball retriever.
I didn't
and
know
get
that.
Your ball out of the water.
What's the point?
It slows up play.
I'm pretty sure it's slow enough already.
Can you imagine how much slower it would be if all these Jews just got out the thing and they go fishing at every hole
right.
for a ball? But you're not even allowed to reach in.
That's crazy.
If you see the ball there on the side.
Friars Head has a rule where you're not allowed to have a rangefinder. That pissed me off too.
And I know the reason why.
Why?
From what I hear, the markers out on the course are not... There's no numbers, but the caddies know how to read them. So you have to take a caddy.
Yeah.
And it's
a three-way rule. You can't carry your own bag.
Right.
You have to take a caddy. You can't use a rangefinder. It's like, oh,
yeah,
come on.
Yeah, that sucks, but...
You had one more.
Okay, and the other one was LA Country Club.
Oh, boy, pants.
The pants. And Bel Air, too.
Gotta wear pants.
Well, that's just as antiquated as buggy whips and our gun laws.
It's
awful.
It's pretty intense.
It's terrible.
Well, in L.A., actually, I mean, if you want to go one step further, the membership there is pretty, what's the word? It's not even exclusive. It's...
Yes, it's truly
prejudiced?
Handed down.
It's prejudice?
Oh, God knows it's prejudice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, okay... I've played LACC once.
Yeah.
It was on Martin Luther King Day.
That's pretty funny.
And so here is a Jew actor playing golf on Martin Luther King Day.
They wouldn't let you join if you had $100 million to go.
That is correct.
Because you're in entertainment. That's a no.
That's a no. But you know those stories, right? There's two famous ones.
What was it?
The Groucho Marx story.
Okay, I don't know this.
When he tried to join.
Oh, tell me. I'm dying.
And they said, I'm sorry, we don't allow Jews. And he goes, well, my daughter is half Jewish. Could she go in the pool up to her waist? That's one story. And then this other story is attributed to either Victor Mature or Gary Cooper when they tried to join LACC, and they said, I'm sorry, we don't allow actors in. And Gary Cooper said, I'm not an actor, and I have 40 movies to prove it. So that's a very, very funny story, too.
I do love those.
Yeah, so...
You know, in the beginning, you reminded me of Annie Hall. When remember when Woody Allen's outside the theater to watch Sorrow and the Pity, and the guy comes up,
hey, you,
an actor?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, I saw you on Johnny Carson.
He's famous.
Right. It's not Fielding Mellish. I can't remember. It's Albie Singer. Yeah. Hey, Al, come over. You know him. Yeah.
The total meathead. And then my favorite joke of all time is... I think it's a Marx joke.
Which one?
He said the two old women are in line at the retirement home getting lunch, and the first one's filling up her plate, and she says, God, the food here is so
terrible.
Awful.
Yeah, thank God the small support.
No, she says, I know, and the portions are too small.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, you've, what was I going to ask you?
Sometime we should have a show where we tell golf jokes.
You got any right now? Any other ones?
Well, I have millions of them, but I'm much too fascinating an interview to ruin it with jokes.
We'll do a separate bit.
Yes.
Okay. We should go play golf. Uh-huh. Do you have any great publics around here that you go play in New York?
Yes. What do you like? I go out to Jersey. I have a good friend who lives in Bradley Beach near Ocean Grove. It's an hour away, and I play Shark River. But there are courses, Howell, Charleston Springs.
I haven't heard of any of these.
They're terrific public courses. And this summer has been gorgeous for the greens and the fairways. They've been playing great. Right nearby, I play like 20 minutes away is in Newark, is a place called Queequeg.
I don't know.
I know. It's a public golf course, a very easy course, but beautiful. I mean, elevated tees and everything. It's a decent course. And then there's another one called Hendrix.
Okay.
So there's five courses between 20 minutes to an hour away. I am lucky enough to have a house with my sister out in Margate, New Jersey.
Okay, by the beach, right? By the shore.
By the beach. Friends of mine have got about 13 or 15 guys to get a conglomerate corporate membership for the summer where we pay about $210 a person.
That's great.
And our fees are they're affordable.
Right.
For like $175, and it's Atlantic City Country Club, which is a great, great layout.
I've never played there or been there, but I've heard about it.
It's lovely. Yeah. Home of the birdie, as they say.
I heard that story. Do you know the story?
I don't know.
The term birdie.
Was founded there.
The term.
Some
guy hit a bird and then he got in.
And then he got in under one. Went under. Okay, good. Okay, that's a great story.
I mean, I want to believe it, but it also seems kind of underwhelming.
Yeah, you're like me. I don't buy it. Okay.
I'm looking for a bigger story.
But Home of the Birdie is fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. Atlantic
also,
City.
Atlantic City is a shady place, so they just made it up. You know?
No, back when it was. Back when it was done, it was not shady at all.
It wasn't. Oh, there were no casinos then.
Right. Oh, no. Atlantic City was, you know, people were on the boardwalk in coat and tie.
Right.
Oh, no. It was of great wealth.
Okay.
And it was beautiful. And you have all the money from in Margate and Ventnor and then Longport. It's a very moneyed community still out there. And it's like Vegas.
Right.
People who live in Vegas, they never go to the Strip.
No.
And people who come to, who live in Margate or Longport, they don't go to the casinos. If they have a guest, you know, from out of town or something, they'll go to the casino for a night.
It's like Times Square for you.
Yeah, I don't go visit Times Square for the
sites. Speaking of New York, were you here on 9/11?
No, I was in L.A.
Oof.
I will tell you, this is not golf-related at all.
It's fine.
It was the first time I ever saw my daughter. It was on 9/11.
What?
We had our child was born by surrogate.
Okay.
And we had the doctor's visit for the checkup, and the sonogram was that day, and it was September 11th, and so we woke up to the news, watching, and it's 6:30 in the morning out here, in L.A. Watching, then we have to go to the doctors. They slip in the you know, the VHS tape. So this is what you're going to see. This is what you're going to look for. It's a, like a 9-minute thing. And then when it came out, I said, do you mind if we turn on the TV to the news? Watching the news, we get called in for the examination. I see my daughter on 9/11. And I went from the horror of watching 9/11 to, oh my God, this is my child. This is my firstborn. And I saw her, Peanut, you know, inside the belly, learned all about it. Everything's healthy. It's a girl, blah, blah, blah. And then we went out and started watching TV again. So to go from the horror to the beauty to back to the horror was really something. So I always say that was the first time I saw my daughter.
And that sounds crazy.
Yeah.
I bring it up because, you know, we're on, I mean, if for everyone at home or in your car or whatever, you know, it was really nice of you, Richard. We were texting to schedule this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're on like, you know, you're like 5 blocks from my house. I'm on 75th Street. Mm-hmm. And you said,
don't give my address. I'll be flooded with people.
You just see, I tried to hide it there.
Please, dear
God. I was going to throw them off.
Yeah. And thank God you're leaving town, because they'd be haunting 75th Street now.
You know, basically the people that listen to this are my parents and they live 5 blocks away. So, but anyway, no, it was really nice. You said, well, I can go there if you want. But I came up here, and what's nice is your area, while it's only 5 blocks away from my parents' house, totally different. And I used to work. Do you ever go to Artie's on Broadway?
Oh, sure.
I used to work there.
You did, huh?
And I was there on 9/11. And it was bizarre. It was bizarre.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Yeah, and so I would get in early.
Wow.
I was there at 6:45.
By the way.
Oh, when did it close?
Yeah, about a year ago.
I fucking hated those guys.
I didn't like the restaurant.
The owners were assholes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They wouldn't let me take Christmas off. Is a Jewish deli. they wouldn't let me, though.
I know.
I was the fucking waiter, and I was like, my parents are going on vacation. I came back after 2 weeks. I said, what's up? They said, you don't have a job here. I was like, cool. Thanks. Anyway.
I got great stories about waiters leaving and stuff like that.
I mean, you must have so many great New York stories. And everybody in the world is fascinated with this city. How long have you lived there?
When I got out of school, I lived here for 4 years. Then I went to Chicago. Then I lived in L.A. for a long time. And now I've been back about 10 years. Yeah. But, I mean, where I was from is in Pennsylvania. Okay, but right across the river from Jersey. So it took about an hour and 10 minutes to get to New York by train. And it took about 50 minutes to get from where I was to Philadelphia. And where I was raised, you either went and saw the Rolling Stones at the Garden or you saw them at the Spectrum. And because I liked Broadway, I was the guy who went to New York. A lot of people I know go to Philadelphia, and that's where they live now. And that's why they still go to Margate, because it's an hour from Philadelphia to Atlantic City. For me, it's 2 hours. And I wish I could go to Bradley Beach, but we bought the house. My sister lives near Philly, so that's what we did. Yeah.
What you were about to tell me a story, though, about you must have some great New York stories.
I do, but I interrupted a question.
And what was that?
Kathy Najimy's husband, who is one of the great guys in the world, a guy named Dan Finnerty. Do you know that name?
No.
He has the Dan Band. You ever hear the Dan Band?
Yeah. Wait, how do I know that band?
They
jazz?
No. Far from it. He sings songs that women are famous for, like "Hear Me Roar" or whatever. But it's great. It's a great, and he is hilarious, and he's a great singer, and Kathy Najimy, great. But Dan is one of those people. It's the most wonderful quality, because he likes to talk like I do, and you get tangents, and you go, "Oh no, like that," and he will not stop a conversation or leave for the evening until you have tied up every thread of every story. And I think that is a charming and wonderful trait.
I'd like to talk to him. Because that's one of the themes of the podcast. I used to get a lot of shit for it in the beginning. This podcast is about 7 months
old. Because
people would say, I can't follow it. I'd say, well, drink another coffee.
Exactly. Sorry, we're just talking. Yeah. That is the two of us are following it. Yeah. Good luck for you. And listen.
Turn up the volume.
Go on low speed.
Yeah.
But you were going to say, when you walk up to a country club.
Yes, there you go.
I know.
That's what I was going to say. When you walk up to a country club,
yes.
do you, because for me, right, like it's gone away. I don't have it anymore. But I used to walk up to a country club and get nervous. Like, I used to get, like, straight up terrified that I was going to break a rule or that I was being bestowed some incredible kindness just to be allowed to, you know, like, park there and or whatever. And now I don't really care anymore. And I'm wondering if that's the case with you. And I guess I'm wondering within myself, how did that even happen? I don't really know.
First of all, they do it on purpose.
It's a thing.
Yeah. We are exclusive. You don't belong here. There are others who pay money to belong. But there's a couple of things. Number one, and both have to do with ego on my part, is I now live my life like everybody wants me there. It doesn't matter where I go. They're happy that I'm there. It's a very conceited thing to think about.
I don't know if I think it's conceited, though. I think it's actually a beautiful way of manifesting kindness all around you.
But I think I'm a good guy.
You are a good guy.
And I don't think that
you offered to come over to my house.
Yeah, no, I'm very nice.
You're very fucking nice.
I am. I'm a very nice guy. Also, and this is crazy. I'm a charitable guy.
Yeah.
And I will, you know, I'll go host a lot of events during September, October, November. There's so many charitable events going on, and they ask me to host. Of course I will. They'll want something, or lunch with Richard Kind, but there's also play golf with Richard Kind. And people pay money to play golf with me.
Of course they do.
It's the stupidest thing in the world. All they have to do is call me up and go, listen, I got a dive. Yeah, I'll be there. Yeah. Of course.
I got an extra spot, Richard.
Yeah, I got to go because I got to move my car at 11 o'clock anyway, so I might as well go to your club.
Right.
You know, I
mean, you're a down-to-earth guy.
But I'm a decent guy.
Yes. You're a New Yorker. That's a big part of it.
I'm a citizen of the world, and right. I expect everybody to treat me honestly, the way that I treat them. But also, when I walk up to a golf course, a lot of people, if they're worth their salt, have seen the Black Swan episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Sure.
So I get greeted with the crispy onions, Black Swan, oh, I love you, your cousin Andy, oh, why did you know, stuff like that. So they sort of know who I am.
Yeah.
They're happy to have me there because up until they get to know me, they think being an actor, I don't shit with my pants down. You know, I don't have to take my pants down to shit. That I'm magic. That I'm a celebrity. That I'm this. Once you get to know me, you go, okay, well, he's an idiot. You know, but but until I prove that I'm an idiot, they're happy to have me there.
Right.
So I don't always feel that way, but I am always grateful that they're being so kind and that I do get to play their course.
Right.
That's always a thrill because I just love playing golf and different golf courses. And if they're really good golf courses, I'm so delighted. I'm just really happy about it.
Speaking of Curb, Larry plays golf. Do you play golf with him?
I actually have.
He's an interesting guy.
Have you spoken to him?
We met once, and you know what he did is, was at a party, and he walked up to me, and he goes, nice shirt, and then reached around behind the back of my neck, yanked the shirt up so he could see the label.
Without asking you?
Nope, didn't ask. Just inspected the label, said, that's a nice shirt. That's a really nice shirt, and then he walked away. And I was like, man, I guess if you're Larry David, you kind of got to manage the conversation in that way and just get out. I don't know, maybe.
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know.
I think I would go, that's a really nice shirt. You know who makes it?
Yeah.
But I guess...
No, he just reached in.
Yeah. No, you know those stories about Bill Murray, right?
The wet willies and stuff?
I don't know.
In the elevator, he gives you, he licks his finger, puts it in your ear and says, no one will believe me.
Right, right. I've heard that he'll walk down the street and somebody's eating al fresco and they'll pick up the hamburger, take a bite and put it down and go, nobody's going to believe you, and then keeps walking.
Yeah, I thought of that tonight, actually.
I think that's the greatest.
Have you ever done that? Have you thought of doing it?
Like, someone
was having calamari at Serafina on my way here, and I thought about it. I just thought about just grabbing
just
a piece
taking it and
saying, smiling. Thanks.
Yeah, but you're nobody. He's Bill Murray. He's Bill Murray. They're gonna go. You know the guy who hosts the golf podcast. You won't know his face.
Yeah.
But he ate some calamari, It's
yeah, you gotta be it's notable.
I think you sort of it helps. Do. That's the joke.
How about you and I go do it one day? Do you think it'll work?
No.
You don't think you could nail that?
No. Absolutely no. And now I happen to know Bill.
Right.
And I've been lucky enough to know him, and there is no kinder, more gracious man who can be more of an asshole sometime.
Yeah.
What he can do, and it's sort of funny, the kind of balls it takes for him to do the things he does. And I understand it, because if I am with, this is hard to explain, but if I'm with people who I can be outrageous with, I'm the funniest guy in the world. But I can't be outrageous with everybody.
Is that really true, though?
Yes.
Who can't you be outrageous in
the world? The world. I can't be outrageous to the world, but I can, even on this show, I can be outrageous and say, no, I've got a lot of interesting, fascinating stories. Who talks like that? Nobody. It's a joke. Okay, I understand. I'm being outrageous. I don't have the most fascinating stories, and I know it, but I'll kid that I am.
Right.
But the world, to him, is that.
Yeah.
Everybody worships him and invites that kind of behavior and are thrilled about it, so that when he eats a hamburger or does the wet willy, nobody will believe it. I've got a great story about Bill Murray that I don't know will translate, but it's a great story.
Okay.
I hope you people understand this. I was doing a play in Chicago at the Goodman Theater, and the Murray brothers were having a golf tournament. This is a little bit of a long story, but it's... So they're having a golf tournament out in Chicago to raise money for the Murray Foundation. So I'm friends with Joel and Brian Murray, Brian Doyle Murray. I didn't know Bill that well. I had met him, but I didn't really know him. I got to know him a few years later. But anyway, I'm coming from the Goodman, and the hotel that everybody is staying at, who are in town, I didn't need a place, but they're staying at the hotel. It was about half a block away. So I walk from the Goodman Theater, and I go to the hotel to meet Joel and Brian, okay? And they're in the lobby, and I say, hey, like that. We get a beer, and we're drinking out in the lobby. Oh, but as I walk up to the hotel, this guy looks sort of like you, disheveled. I mean, I wish you people could see. You have not shaved. Your hair has not met a comb in 10 years, and you're tall and skinny, and... this guy, looking very much like you, goes, dude, oh, dude, I can't believe I'm seeing you. Oh, my God, this is unbelievable. Oh, my God, because I was just out here, and I got hit by a cab, and now I see you. And I go, hold on, you were hit by a cab. Yeah, it was unbelievable. I got hit by a cab, and now I'm meeting you, and I can't believe it. Oh, dude. Like, okay, so I meet this guy, and I walk into the hotel. And I'm drinking there with Brian and Joel, and we're talking, and Bill comes in, and the four of us are talking, okay? And we're talking, and this guy comes into the lobby and sees Bill Murray, and he goes, oh, my God! Oh, dude, it's Bill Murray! I can't believe it! Oh, my God! Oh, because, man, I just got hit by a cab outside. I was hit by a cab, and now I'm meeting Bill Murray, and oh, my God. And Bill goes, wait, what? And he goes, you got hit by a cab? He goes, yeah! Oh, my God, I just got hit by a cab, and now it's Bill Murray. I can't believe it. And Bill Murray goes, wow. And he walks towards me, goes, you got hit by a cab? He goes, and the guy goes, yeah! And he goes, oh, my gosh. And he takes the flat of his hand, and he just goes, bam! And knocks the guy to the ground. And Joel and Brian and this guy are like looking like, oh, my God. And the guy just goes, ah! And he just started laughing. Because Bill Murray just slapped him across. And you could hear the noise. And knocked him to the ground. What kind of outrageous behavior is that? And the guy laughed, and we were aghast. It truly took our breath away. It was the funniest, most brazenly funny thing I've ever seen ever in my life. Now, I don't know whether or not you're getting the whole story of that, because I once told the Coen brothers this story, and maybe it was the way I told it or the way they interpreted it. They found no humor at all. They could not digest what the story was. But I'm telling you, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. The most brave. It was like Mel Brooks making fun of the Nazis. That's how brazen this humor was. And the guy laughed. And Bill Murray knew that this guy would laugh. He just knew he could get away with it.
Right.
And I don't understand it. And that's the honest to God's truth. I don't understand how he did it. But he does. He does. He's that funny. And he does, I think he did that, I can't say out of love, but he didn't do it to hurt the man.
Right.
He did it to say, you're here, okay, you got hit by a cab, yeah, nobody special, or we're making fun of, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it's the work of an asshole, and yet it wasn't asshole-y.
Well, in a way, like, it is, I can see the experience of being like, like, in a way, like almost like slapping him is like saying, like,
yes,
like I really care about you.
Yes,
like,
I care exactly.
Like this is happening.
Yes, and I'm paying attention to you.
Yeah, yeah.
You are having an effect on my life, and I will return
right.
in kind.
Yeah,
and he is acknowledging this guy's presence in the world,
or maybe even like you know, it could have even been like a walk down that logic of if you hit your hand, then you know, then you should hit your toe. You know, like to take away from one.
I don't know if that was it,
but
no, I don't think. Okay, look, I'm going to yes and you. Yes, okay, okay, good for you. Good,
good improv.
I don't
good
believe
improv.
That, but oh, okay,
whatever.
It could be that too. But
have you ever wanted to punch somebody that you've been talking to that you shouldn't, that you don't know?
Yeah, you ever hear of Times Square?
What? No, but I mean, like say you're going to do a job. And
I am not the type to hit people.
No, but not even do.
But I wish that I could.
I think about it. Like I'll think about it. This might
tell me,
be. This
go
might
ahead.
Be too
go
much.
Ahead. I think
about like pushing people down the stairs or like whatever I could do that would be like someone that I really love or care about. I'm like I could punch them right now, even though I never ever would. I don't have like fits of rage that I run into,
right.
But I just think about or I could do. I could
well,
piss
once
on someone's leg.
I'll reference Annie Hall. Remember Christopher Walken? In
oh
Annie
yeah.
Hall?
Oh yeah.
Sometimes I just go. I can't do an imitation. I'm driving a car and I feel like just turning into the car next to me and then the trip to the airport.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was his first role, wasn't it? I think it was.
I think it might have been. Yeah.
I think it was his first.
Yeah.
I'm a big, big Woody Allen fan.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, we can move on from that. we don't. Not a very political
to,
podcast.
I know.
You know, it's all about uniting people. It's not about dividing.
I wish the world were actually like that.
That's
and the sad thing is that with all the Russian hacking and there might be collusion and all of that, and we're getting into politics, but if you think about what Russia may have really done, that we are so divided is the whispering, you know, if you tell one kid, I'll tell you a very interesting showbiz story. Ilya Kazan, who was a brilliant, brilliant director, directed On the Waterfront and Streetcar Named Desire, a few other things.
Marlon Brando.
And he, oh, sugar, hold on a second. Who's calling me?
Got a phone call coming in.
Okay.
You want me to pause it?
No. Yeah, I'm doing a podcast about golf. I'll call you later. that's who I golf with a lot.
Oh, cool.
So it goes, so Ilya Kazan is directing a movie called Viva Zapata.
Okay.
Where Marlon Brando is playing Zapata and Anthony Quinn is playing, I think, his brother or something like that. Now, Marlon Brando played Stanley in Streetcar Named Desire, created the role, directed by Ilya Kazan. The guy who did it on tour was Anthony Quinn.
Ah.
Okay? And Ilya Kazan. So there's a scene where the brothers are really fighting. They're really angry at each other. And Ilya Kazan whispers to Marlon Brando, you know, I know you created the role of Stanley, but from what I hear on tour, Anthony Quinn was so much better than you. I just heard that on tour that it's just a shame that he didn't open the show. And then to Anthony Quinn, he goes over and whispers,
oh no,
you know, I hear you're great on the tour, but let's face it, you think of Stanley, you think of Marlon Brando. So these two hated each other, okay?
Oh.
And they never, it's horrible, horrible. Yeah. Well, maybe Russia is doing that to us.
Whoa.
Is secretly whispering to the right, you know, the Hillary is blah, blah, blah. And whispering to us, you know, whatever Republican or, you know, much less Trump is this guy and this guy. And you read it, and truly it is fake news.
Yeah.
I mean, at the time when fake news was really out there because the Russians are invading.
Yeah.
And that's how they invaded. So I wish we could unite people together, but unfortunately we have Elia Kazan in the middle whispering things to all the Americans.
A great dictator, great director.
I mean. Yeah.
I mean, we're good. Like we're at our time. I try to do an hour. Anything else you want to talk about?
Oh my God! All you have to do is just say,
go.
I'm not good. Yeah. I'm not good with anything else you want to talk about.
Yeah.
You ask me a question, I'll just go and go and go.
Yeah.
But
why don't we?
No,
put
I got nothing. I didn't have anything I wanted to say when we started.
Right.
You're asking the question,
and now
so I'm answering.
80, 90, 70 minutes later.
Holy crow!
We've covered a lot. We had a few minutes prior. We did a little. I usually just hit record, so we even had some off mic discussion.
Wow.
I just like the casual nature of it.
I do too.
How about this? Why don't we end on the most inspirational advice you've ever been given for people out there who either.
Advice.
Yeah, that you know, because there are people listening to this that want to get into the creative arts or into
golf. Or
into
advice,
golf.
Advice about life.
I think about your avocation, right? Because I get a lot of messages about people wanting to get into golf, and it's like that's a hard nut to crack. But I think, how do you live your dream?
All right. When I was at school, there's a guy who's a very famous director in Chicago and elsewhere. A great, great guy and a great teacher named Frank Galati. And Frank Galati said, somebody was getting up and happened to have been doing Streetcar. Somebody was performing Streetcar and, you know, they're not giving it their all. And he got up there and this is in college and he said, you know, the only reason you're acting right now is because your parents are paying a fortune for you to act. Okay, they're paying Northwestern a lot of money, and now I'm giving you the opportunity to get up and act. Because nobody wants to see you act. We don't care about you. And when you get out into the world, nobody wants to see you act. You're nobody. Every actor wants, they want to get up and act, and they want to do it. This is the reason you were put on the planet. You want to act. This is what you love to do. I'm giving you the opportunity to do what you love to do. So you better grab it with all the gusto you have and put energy and put love and put concern into what you're doing. Because to be honest, we don't care. We want to act. We don't want to see you act. And I thought about that and I go, it's true. Whenever I get to work, it's because it's what I love to do and it's what God put me on the planet for. And I suppose you can say that to any profession. Why am I doing this? If you're doing it to make money, I'm sorry. But if you are lucky enough to have chosen something that you like or can even talk yourself into loving doing, go and do it with the most that you've got, because what the hell? It doesn't matter. Nobody wants to see you do that. We don't care. We want to be happy. So you might as well make yourself happy.
I like it.
Okay.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks for your time.
You bet.
And is there anything coming up that we should tell people about?
No.
Fuck
no,
it.
No.
You're going to be
No, here. Not that golfers would like.
I think what's coming up is you and I are going to play golf together.
I'd love that. And believe me, I could go on about, for instance, what I'm learning of late is my teacher, I schlep all the way out an hour for this guy to teach me.
Why don't you go to Chelsea Piers?
Oh, my God. Nobody good there.
Really?
Say that. I shouldn't
no,
say
okay.
That.
You don't like the pros there. That's
no,
fine.
No. I shouldn't say that. You want to know something? I'm wrong. But it's way overpriced.
Is it really?
Oh, my
God. It's like $30 to hit a bucket or something like that by the time you're done.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
so, but that's New York.
Yeah.
I mean, you're paying for a place that otherwise, you know, is is you know, twice as much rent for half the space and everything, and they have to pay for their realty.
Yeah.
I mean, that's it's expensive.
It's a huge piece of property.
Yeah, but it's convenient. Although Chelsea Piers is not really convenient, but it is in the
city. You have to take a cab.
And it's crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway, my guy's out there, and I have recently, this used to be my grip, so I would release early, and I would
cup. It was a little horrible. Casting.
No, I wouldn't cast, but I'd cup.
Oh, okay.
Okay. My wrist would break, and I have since changed I have gotten to the pronation.
Okay.
It is the most difficult thing I've ever done because I've been playing for 20 years, cupping.
Yeah.
You know, scooping the ball.
And now you're changing it.
And I'm not a good athlete, and my eye-hand coordination is not great, but I have made it good enough that I can be a decent golfer. But it's wrong. And no teacher has ever said anything.
What? That's fucked up.
It's not. It's, I'm going to take your swing, and I'll make it better. You know, I'll take what you offer.
But we're not going to start over.
But we're not starting over. This guy has started over.
Is that?
Yes.
So when did that start?
It's been about 8 months.
Nearing the light at the end of the tunnel?
Oh, I'm hitting the ball much better. My score is not good yet, but in a month or two of playing, if I lived in L.A., it would be much better because I'd be at the range every day for at least 20 minutes.
All the time.
Yeah, but I'm at the range all the time when I'm in L.A. at the expense of my career. But I'm not scoring well yet, but it will come.
Yeah.
I'm willing to. I haven't been gambling, so I don't care about.
You don't gamble when you golf.
Gambling and golfing is the difference. It's like singing in the shower versus singing at Carnegie Hall. If you gamble, you the game is different.
It stresses me out.
It's very stressful.
Yeah.
And I love that.
You do.
Oh yeah. Look, I'm okay.
You're a performer.
I perform when I got more scared teeing off number one hole with about 30 guys around at my club than I am when I did the producers at the Hollywood Bowl.
What a great play, man.
It's great. But there's 15,000 people versus 30 guys, and I am terrified hitting a golf ball off the first tee because I can't hit the golf ball well all the time.
Right.
But I can act.
You can act.
I can act, so why not? I know I can do that, but golf, I can't do that with any regularity.
That must have been such a fun role.
Yeah, it was great. I lost 30 pounds doing it.
Did you really? Why?
Yep, when I did on Broadway. Running around, sweating. Oh my God, dancing. It was crazy. Not at the Hollywood. I only did like 4 performances at the Bowl.
Yeah.
But I had done it on Broadway for 7 months.
So, do those songs get stuck in your head? Some of those songs from the producers? They do, and I feel like you can't sing those songs out loud, you know, like just on the street.
Sure you can, especially in New York. Oh, you can sing them at the top of your lungs in New York. Yeah, you could absolutely.
Let's get together and play golf next time.
I would love it.
We'll do golf jokes. You and I can do some research individually.
Or I'll take you to Lakeside, you take me to Wilshire.
That sounds great. When are you coming to LA next?
Whenever they want me.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I'm going to Scotland. I'll be back in a couple weeks.
That's great.
Yeah, I come to New York, come to LA when it gets cool. I'm going to come back here in October or something. So
we'll could drive to the Hamptons. We can go.
I love it.
Play Centennial. There's courses around here that are great.
Have you played Somerset? Are you into like old? I got really into. Do you listen to podcasts at all?
I do.
Everybody. I love this guy Andy. He does this podcast called The Fried Egg. And he goes deep into the historical relevance of golf and its architecture. So, you know, New York's a really wonderful place to play golf because it's got
I play the Westchester courses, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. So anyway, which course? I don't know Westchester that well.
Oh, the courses are...
Sleepy Hollow or what? No, that's not
Westchester. Well, you play Sleepy Hollow, which is where Larry used to belong.
I didn't know that.
My God, you have Wingfoot. You have... Yeah. Westchester Country Club. Oh my gosh, they're great, great. No, I'm not talking great, great. Ridgewood out in New Jersey.
They're playing there tomorrow. I'm going there tomorrow. The Northern Trust Open is there tomorrow.
I'm sorry. Yes, of course. Yes, Northern. Are you going tomorrow?
I'm going tomorrow, yeah.
Tomorrow is Tuesday?
Yeah, you want to come?
Yes.
Let's do it.
What are you going to do? You're not playing, though. You're
just I'm just going to film. And like then in the afternoon, you know Kevin Chappell?
I know the name.
Yeah, I'm going to do a podcast with him in the afternoon.
Oh, I was invited. They called me. It's Northern Trust? Is that who
it is? Yeah. You going to play in the Pro-Am on Wednesday?
No, but if I go tomorrow, maybe they'll invite me.
They should. I don't know. PGA Tour Pro-Ams are psycho.
They are.
It's crazy.
I used to do the Bob Hope.
Yeah, six and a half hours.
Oh,
easy.
Really?
Easy. Six and a half. It's crazy.
Okay. Well, we didn't know it didn't take that long. Oh, God, I'd love to. They're not going to invite me, but if I went tomorrow, I was invited by the people of Northern Trust, a representative, to go Thursday through Sunday, whatever day
right.
I wanted to go and go to their tent and everything like that. And that was very, very nice. And I'm so grateful. See, I'm a schmuck.
You're not
a schmuck. I'm some guy who just walks around the street. But Northern Trust was kind enough to call me and invite me to stop by any day I want and give me a ticket. Now, that's who couldn't love my life?
Right.
What a lucky guy I am.
You are.
I'm the luckiest guy around.
On all sides, you know?
Yes, I am. I am.
You got a good deal.
I have great kids, beautiful wife, a nice home, and a lovely career so far.
You have a hole in one?
Four of them.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
That's not fair.
Two of them at 186 yards.
Wow.
Exactly 186 yards.
That's not.
On different courses.
That's not a short one.
Yes, and then one was an executive course, so it really doesn't matter.
It counts.
But it was the ninth hole. It was only nine holes, and there was a guy sitting on the patio, so he saw it, and therefore I couldn't just say, "Oh, look what I got."
Right, right.
Yeah, my favorite was, it's not mine. George Clooney's a good. I'll end this with George Clooney, George. We were playing somewhere in San Diego, something like that, and I think it's the ninth or the 18th of a fairly famous golf course, and it's a par three, and he hits it, and he whiffs it, and it just goes like 2 inches in front, and he got so mad he just hit the ball and put it in the hole for a three.
No way.
Yep. Or yeah for a
two. For a par. Oh, no, that was actually a two.
For a two.
He made a birdie.
A hole in one for a birdie. Yeah. Isn't that hilarious?
That's amazing. I mean, that must have been incredible. Like, you're just like, you can't stop laughing.
You can't stop laughing.
No.
Yeah, I got other.
That's my favorite part about golf, is every shot is a chance for that.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Oh, when I'm gambling and I'm thinking, okay, all I have to do is two putt and I'll win. Oh, no. He's 30 yards out and he could put it in the hole and beat me. And now I got a one putt. It's nuts. Oh, I play with a very, very good golfer. He's a plus two. His name is Chuck Miller. He used to be the club champion at Wilshire.
Okay.
Chuck Miller.
I don't know him, but I feel I've seen his name on the wall. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Chuck Miller.
D. Miller? Middle name D? I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Are you fucking kidding me? So we're playing at some course. It's a par five. He's a real long hitter. He's got wrists the size of my thighs. And I'm in front of the green in three. I get a stroke from him, thing like that. He puts it in the water in two, up by the green.
Okay.
Takes a drop.
Holes out for birdie.
He chipped up. And he's a good enough golfer that he, you know, I say there's two types of golfers. One that step up to a putt and go, just let me get it near, just give me a dip. And one who's off the green and chips it and says, let me put it in.
Wow.
That's two kinds of golfers. I am the first guy. I am, please let me two putt. Please let me two putt.
I kind of go in between.
Okay. Yeah. You're a six.
Depends on the day.
And you have the fit body of an athlete.
Yeah.
So I am not.
I try.
I am.
But you don't need to be. You
when
just
people
anybody
say,
can
play. They say, am I a good golfer? I go, for what I look like, I'm spectacular. Let's end it.
Thanks, Richard. Have a great, enjoy your night, everybody, or your day, or whatever, wherever you're at in life. Bye.